Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome to the third or fourth, I guess this is the fourth, my gosh, I can't count, the fourth episode of Inspired Leadership. And today we're going to be talking with Mark Appleyard of Anathan Global. I am Deborah Brown, and my beautiful co-host, Dawn Earhart-Witte, is on with us as well. Dawn, say hello.
Hello.
Hello, there she is. And we'll let Mark say hello in just a second, but how about if I introduce Mark, and then we will let him start to have his time with us. So Mark Appleyard and his wife, Julie, serve as founders of Anathan Global, a global network of online micro-communities, Anathan Publishing House, products to release people into their God-given destiny, and Anathan Consulting, a global senior executive consulting network that has been active in 12 United States states, as well as 18 nations. Mark and Julie are regular international conference speakers. They have a combined Christian leadership experience across the world of over 45 years that has included two church plants, turning a small church around to be a community impacting church, as well as serving on the senior executive of a 3,000 member church with nearly 40 full-time staff. They have three adult children, aged 24, 22, and 20, and they have dedicated their lives to activating people to think, speak, and live like heaven. And that's what we want to talk with Mark about today in terms of inspired leadership and how to think, speak, and live like heaven. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Deborah, thank you. And Dawn, it's a real honor to be with you guys today.
Thank you for being on our show.
It's just great to be able to hang out with some other leaders and be able to just chew the fat for a while around all things quality and impact.
Absolutely. You know, Mark, when we first communicated, I remember I was just so inspired by every single thing we talked about, and the thing that you left me with that stuck out in my head, and I've quoted it many times since then, is you said that you like to live in the land of miracles. And, you know, I think that that's such a beautiful and inspired way to live. And I'm so grateful that we know each other, and I'm so grateful to be able to share your beautiful voice with the world.
Thank you, Dawn. Yeah, a statement that most accurately reflects how we live and really why we go about it. You know, our why is predicated upon our belief system, and we strongly believe that if you want to know where God is, then get yourself in the middle of miracle territory, because that's where he's found. And we strongly believe that. And we often joke, but it's also the truth, that we, you know, when we come out of one lot of miracle territory, we take a few steps back so we can get a running start to jump into the middle of the next lot.
Oh, you just gave me goosebumps again all over my body, because that's such a powerful message, and I so fully believe that. Deborah, well, before we start asking you some questions and talking about inspired leadership, I would like you to tell us a little bit more about you and what you do and how you got to be where you are today. Maybe just a short
version. I've been in, before we moved to America, we moved stateside from Australia back in 2010. And for 15 years prior to that, I was bivocational. In other words, I ran a small electrical subcontracting business while pastoring pretty much full time as well. Yeah, for me, the dots have always been joined between being a spiritual community-based leader and business. So those two things have always been very close together for us. We never wanted to send people out into a world that we weren't willing to be a part of ourselves. So by choice, I chose to operate as a subcontract electrician. And then we moved here stateside, and our visa wouldn't allow me to work in any capacity outside of pastoral ministry. So I joined the local business community here in our area here, just outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, and just started just going about the business of giving ourselves away with no strings attached. We started a show on Ustream back then. We've been doing it for about 7 or 8 years, called Your View, where we were just free of charge. I would pay a gentleman to do it for us, but we would offer it free of charge to a local business every week. Where we would interview a different business leader just to promote them, find out what they loved about the area, get the heart behind the brand, and then promote it across social media with no strings attached. And we really felt called not to grow a big church, but a church of a big influence. And so that was sort of the heartbeat behind how and why we went about what we did. A super long story cut very short. I ended up connecting up with a business leader out in the Middle East area there, and CEO of a large company. And he and I became good friends and came alongside to help him in his business and leadership. And the impact in his life was great. And so he acted like a person of peace to connect us up with other business leaders. And then before we knew it, we found our ministry and our whole model of leadership development just take a really different turn. And so that was the birthplace of Anaphan. And the word Anaphan actually comes out of the Bible in John chapter 3, verse 3, where there's the famous story of Nicodemus meeting Jesus in the night. And he says to Jesus, "What must I do to inherit the kingdom of God?" Which for a religious leader sounds like a pretty, you know, rudimentary question to ask. You think he would have had that one squared away. But nonetheless, apparently he did not. And Jesus said in response, "Well, you must be born again." And that word again is the word Anaphan, and it means from above. So what does it mean to live from above? And many spiritual people are trying to strive to live toward a place that they should be living from. They try to live towards heaven from the earth, whereas actual fact, we are given the opportunity to live from earth to heaven, on earth as it is in heaven, in that famous prayer that Jesus gave the disciples. So for us, when we looked at that, we said, well, what does it look like to do business, to do life, to do family on earth as it is in heaven, from heaven's perspective? And so that opened up a whole host of different things. And as we walked down that journey, we found that we were coaching more business leaders. It radically transformed the way we did the function of church. We started writing material. We deconstructed the model of church from a geographical space to put it on a virtual space, a digital space. That really is the 35,000-foot view of what we do. And we're now opening up in Australia. We literally, just before, we caught the last plane out of Australia back stateside a few weeks ago to launch Anaphan Australia. We'll be in Europe this year as well to launch Anaphan Europe, and they'll be proper businesses that are set up in those places. So our aim is to be on three continents by the end of this year.
Wow, that is such a powerful message. And no matter what your faith, you know, coming from, you know, connecting with, you know, the higher power, connecting with God, connecting with the universe, that is the key to all of us, right? Living into our own greatest good.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. I mean, we are made as spiritual beings, first and foremost. And that's to deny that is to deny an essential part of our humanity.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, sometimes we get kind of bogged down in what we call it, or what book we read, or, you know, what church we attend. But, you know, God is greater than all of that.
Mm. That's right. He is. He transcends.
Yes.
You know, we often say that, you know, when the genie is out of the bottle, we try to control God. We try to understand God. And, you know, if we claim that we understand everything there is to know about God, then by definition, that's who we become. So I tend to hold many things with a very open hand as I travel this journey. I like to keep my eyes and my ears and my heart wide open to keep learning about him and the journey he wants to take us on. And my wife, you know, she says anybody, she says everything that comes across our way is an invitation by God to deeper intimacy with him.
Oh, that's beautiful. Deborah, did you have anything to say at this point?
I do.
I know you do.
I do. Well, I have your webpage open, which I always tend to look around and see what people are doing before I have a chance to talk with them. And I see that on the executive coaching page, you talk about being a business pastor, which I have never heard that before, as a title. and that you have a person's leadership success and business breakthroughs at heart, and that you have the capacity to hear from heaven while coaching your clients to do the same. So I'm intrigued by all of that. And if you could speak to that a little bit, I think that the leadership nuggets are in there just by virtue of saying that. So if you could talk to that, that would be great.
Yeah, and there's a lot in that, in the in answering that. But probably the easiest way, and again, just making, for me, I come from a paradigm that says God speaks to you, and I respect that there are others that say, well, that's just not right, and you should go to a mental asylum because you say that out loud. Well, it's fine, and I respect that. But for me, that's the paradigm that I come from, and how I arrive at that is that, if I, again, from my Christian perspective, I believe in a Trinitarian God, a Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Well, the second member of that Trinity, Jesus, is called the Word. So for me, the perspective I come from says that if the second member of the Trinity is called the Word, then communication is pretty high on his priority list. If that's what he, that's what he's choosing to call himself. So therefore, if a person is a spiritual Christian business leader, however they want to define themselves, and they want to build a business that has that in mind, then at the highest point on their priority list is that they need to know what he sounds like. They can ill afford to sort of know the sound of the voice of God. And that's not something that I have a mortgage on. It's something that's available that you can know that you know that you know that you hear the voice of God. So the first starting point that we have in our business coaching consulting is to say, let's help you with that. And we have some tools that we've worked with, some that we've developed ourselves, others we've borrowed from elsewhere that I've learned from elsewhere that we employ and really put to task with people that go, yes, I'm ready to sign up and go after that. Because if you know the sound of the voice of God, then half the problem's already solved. You can actually get access to blueprints that you otherwise wouldn't get access to mindsets, to ways of thinking and seeing. So from our, again, my paradigm is that if God is the beginning and the end of this whole thing called eternity, then he's a pretty good person to get some solutions from to some of the very temporal problems that I find myself in day after day after day. So we spend a lot of time working with business leaders. So how it normally would work would be that they have some processes that they go to and lead up to a call. And so 20 minutes of our call is normally them sharing what they've learnt. As they're sharing that, I'm listening, and I usually find afterwards that I'll say, okay, I've got about three or four questions that I feel the Lord wants you right now to press into. And I'm going to give you 20 minutes and we'll keep the call open, and I'll go in and I'll do some work. And then 20 minutes of whatever they've got as they've heard his voice, then I coach in and say, all right, let's put some practice to that. Let's get some wheels on those things right there. And the most amazing things start happening in people's business lives.
Well,
wow.
What I was thinking as you're saying that is that the power of prayer and meditation when you're trying to solve a problem. And a lot of times a person will say, and I have done this, I'll say, I don't really have time to pray right this minute because I'm so tied up with what I'm doing. And yet it's been said many times, that's the exact time you do have the most time to pray. Pardon me?
Yeah, that's a great observation.
Exactly. And the other thing
is... Go ahead. Yeah, I would agree with that wholeheartedly. I mean, I love a quote that just springs to mind is Martin Luther, the great reformer, when he said, I'm so busy today, I don't have my usual time to pray my usual 2 hours. I therefore must pray three. It's just that same thing that he understood that in actual fact he got greater efficiency if he prayed more, not less.
Right. Well, sometimes I pray at night before I go to sleep, and I wake up with clarity that I don't know where it came from, and I do believe that Don and I can tell you about many, many miracles that have happened between she and I just in conversations and in noticing things that are happening in our lives that are mirrors. I'll say something and she says, I was just thinking that. And it's true. And we both do it all the time. And we just really do believe that our friendship is a miracle. And I believe that, that, you know, leaders finding other leaders, I call that that process when I'm looking for people who are like me, I call that calling the kindred. And, you know, it's a it's a process. You know, I want to be around people who our joint vibration can help solve problems. So I think that's that's maybe my leadership calling, is to help other people find their place and their voice,
and know,
their
to
people. Be able to change the world. Yeah,
I love it. I just think that's great. I mean, you tap into so many things there, Deborah. I think you know, first of all, is that our spirit never sleeps. I think that's a you know, why do we dream? That part of us isn't sleeping. And you know, so when our spirit doesn't sleep, then, you know, we get the greatest clarity all of a sudden when we wake up in the morning, because it hasn't, you know, it just hasn't had the parameters of what can or cannot happen in our, what we think in our natural world. So that when the parameters are taken off, suddenly our ability to call into being that which seems impossible becomes a very living and real reality for us to grab a hold of. We go, oh, I can do that because I've now seen different solutions to the problem that I couldn't see before. And that's also, you know, that spirit-to-spirit connection is very a very human thing with one another. I mean, that's, you know, you meet some people and you just know straight away, oh, we are, you know, there's just a connection there. And, you know, even people who claim to be out-and-out atheists still use the same phraseologies. I feel really connected to that person. I mean, you're just, yeah, I reckon you point again to a very key part about humanity.
Yeah,
well,
I think,
Don, I was actually going to ask you to tell a story a little bit, if you want to, about the various things that you have been asking for in spirit, you know, asking spirit for, however you want to say it, you know, like somehow for a borehole to be placed in some place in Africa where there is no water, somehow for there to be, you know, a school or an outlet for people to be able to, you know, share their gifts. And suddenly the pieces fall into place. And I believe it's what we're talking about, is that calling into being things that seemed impossible before. Am I right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Stepping into your purpose, stepping into your calling, stepping out onto that green growing edge where it's like kind of scary, but, you know, your heart is telling you and pulling you to do it. When you do that, that is, you know, the land of miracles, because that is when all the magic starts happening. That is how I met you, Deborah, and that is how I connected with you, Mark, and, you know, all of these amazing the kindred souls are coming into my life because I did take that leap of faith, and it was definitely a leap of faith, you know. And so, Mark, would you like to just tap into that a little bit? Because I think that, you know, we come again, when you speak, I get goosebumps all over because it is like I'm hearing an echo.
Wow. No, I love the connection between faith and risk. And that's, you know, some of what you're saying there, Dawn, is you take a risk, you reach out to someone, you know, you put something in the ground and see if water comes out, or, you know, it's just, and all these things start to happen. And many times I find leaders hit a ceiling because the, you know, maybe just backtrack a little bit. I think that we blame so much on other people and even other spiritual forces in our world. I know within the Christian paradigm, you know, I hear all the time, well, you know, the enemy's just roadblocking me, or Satan's got in my way, or, you know, whatever you hear people say, and other paradigms are different, but they mean the same thing. Well, I honestly think that the most disempowering force in this universe is ourselves, and the most disempowering word in our English vocabulary is the word can't. The moment I say can't, cannot, I've put the ceiling over that particular area of my life. I've now said I can't get above that. I can't go beyond that. I've done as much as I can. I can't. So when we start to remove those words out, well, now we're free to take risk again. Faith is the substance which is held in the container of belief, if I could put it that way. That's how I relate belief and faith. The belief is like a container. and faith gets filled into that container. So if I've only got a tiny little belief system, then I'm not going to have a lot of faith. But if I've got a big belief system, then I have a greater lot of faith. Well, belief, it only comes from encounter. That's how we believe things. We believe a person. We believe something to be trustworthy and true as we've encountered that particular truth. I love that story in the Bible of Zacchaeus. For those who don't know, Zacchaeus is this little man, and he is little because the Bible calls him a small man, but was a tax collector. And this tax collector was just he was brutal, he was, and he quite arbitrarily just ripped money from people. And if it was today, Zacchaeus would have pulled up in his Ferrari and stepped out of your business in his, with his Armani shoes on as a tax collector. And you'd look out the window and think, well, there's no food on my table tonight. And I think I paid for those shoes the last time he was here. Everybody hates Zacchaeus. Well, Zacchaeus, whilst hears Jesus is coming into town, the Bible says in Luke 19 that he climbs up a sycamore fig tree so he could get a look at Jesus. And Jesus looks up and he's surrounded by religious leaders and he says, Zacchaeus, come down. I'm going to eat with you tonight. To which you could imagine that, oh, he's going to do what? I mean, you and I, we would be upset to the highest order hearing that Jesus would do that. Well, Jesus and Zacchaeus, they go to his house. We don't see much happen, but all of a sudden, Zacchaeus starts giving his money away like a man with 10 arms. He said, if I've robbed someone this much or I've taken this much, then I'll give away that much to the poor. And he starts doing all these things. But why would he do that? It's because he had an encounter that informs his belief system about who Jesus is and who he is. Now his faith capacity increases as well. So all these things, why I say that, is all this is tied to risk. And when we want to step out and we want to risk, we want to push the boundaries, and that, I love that, on that green edge, we want to go beyond into those new places. We can't just wake up one morning and suddenly just decide to do that, and we can't do it in a sustainable way until we deal with our belief system and our faith capacity. So once we've worked out, okay, this is what I believe. Belief tells me why I do stuff. Once I've got a handle on my belief, then my values just automatically fall into alignment. If I try and go values first, then all I've done is put new performance metrics in place to try and align my behavior with. But values need to fly out of our belief system. So once we believe something to be true and right, now faith is filled to run in synergy and with that belief. Now I'm ready to take risk. So why I say that is that a lot of people get that far and then never take risk. Well, risk is something that's is a vital part of appropriating our faith. In fact, I think James says in the New Testament, faith without works is dead. It's actually, you haven't got faith in anything if you're not, taking some risk. But what is risk? Well, risk, we spell it R-I-S-K. And R, we see, is that we recognize change is coming. That's the first part. Very important to stop and go, you know what, let's keep our eyes on the horizon. Change is coming. Recognize it. I is I'd buy the scope of the change. So sit down and really go to school on this change that's coming and do all your homework and all your due diligence. Learn what you can about the scope of the change that's coming. S is is actually the action point. Now becomes the time to step in and activate the change. So we've now stepped in and now we're in the miracle territory because the research can only do so much. Now we're in the middle of, all right, I got more questions than answers. Step in and activate the change. And then from my paradigm, the K is the kingdom favor that now has come your way that you've got to steward. But here's the thing. We're meant to live a life of an S-curve, not a bell curve. If we stay in the K, then we're in this false positive, which we call la-la land, where we just think, oh, I twinkle my nose and every good thing happens. No, you forgot that there was R, I, and S involved to get you to K. When you're in K, it's time to start looking to the horizon again because you need to recognize change is coming again. And we get this process of belief that holds faith that now gets appropriated through risk. But because I have risk, I encounter new things. So my belief system increases so I can carry more faith so I can risk greater things. We get this beautiful cycle of pushing through barriers and boundaries that rips the word can't out of our vocabulary. And it enables us to power forward to bring amazing change into the lives of people.
Oh, it's growth, right? It is a constant growth our entire lives.
It is exactly right. It shouldn't stop.
Yes. Deborah, I know you're so excited about RISC.
Oh, yeah. I am an acronym queen. Everything I do when I speak, I have an acronym so that I can stand and deliver. If somebody asked me to do something on the words fan wave, I can do that. It's seven letters. I've got it. I can do it. I can do a TED talk right now on on that. But I think it's not only clever, but it will help me remember basically for the rest of my life every time I see the word RISC that it is not a negative thing. It is a very positive thing, and as Dawn said, a growth thing. And if you're not growing, you're dying. So that's exciting. And I love the idea that you got the cycle of faith and belief and risk. And that belief is a container for faith. I love anything that shows me where the containers are. I love that. Well, I would like to say go ahead.
No, you're right. I was just going to say that they're also those things are all tied to trust, belief, and faith. When they're in synergy and they're working together, now we can trust.
Yes. Well, what I was going to say is the book that Dawn and I are writing is going to feature the traits of 10X leaders. And we're calling inspired leaders also 10X leaders. And we have come up with 10 traits that are different from the traits that most people associate with leadership. They are like an amplification in our minds. And I actually wrote them, I've told other people about this, about Dawn. So I'd like to read them now because I think you'll understand when we get to number 6, you're going to realize that we've just been really hammering number 6. And we started with number 10, which is about awe and wonder and miracles. So what we're saying is that inspired.
Same thing.
I know. inspired leaders possess equal parts visionary spirit, passionate creativity, and bold strength of character. And then they have these 10 additional traits, and I will just number them and go down the 10, and then we'll come back and go back to 6 and 10. Number 1 is singularity of purpose. Number 2, ability to ask for help. 3, awareness of opportunities. 4, willingness to burn the boats. 5, confidence in core values. 6, strong belief system. 7, acceptance of responsibility to a calling. 8, willingness to share credit and build team. 9, ability to see the beauty and inherent good in others. And 10, sense of awe and wonder. And I just want to read the rest of what number 10 is. 10X leaders know that miracles abound, that miracles are everywhere and every day. They have a childlike ability to say wow about something each and every day. And that's what we thought you would definitely like to speak about, which you did. And then the other one, number 6, the strong belief system. We're saying that 10X leaders have evolved into mighty oaks rooted in love. They have most likely started an international kindness evolution or a significant movement with the help of friends and colleagues. So, welcome to our world, Mr. Number 6.
I mean, there's just so much in there that I resonate with as well. It's fabulous, and not least of which is love. It is the centerpiece of everything we do. In actual fact, love is our highest goal. That beautiful opus of love in 1 Corinthians 13 that I think gets read at nearly every wedding that I've ever been to is finished off with the cherry on top, which is the following verse in the next chapter, which is 1 Corinthians 14:1, and that's where Paul says, therefore, let love be your highest goal. And what does it look like to live with love as your highest goal? That's a paradigm shift.
Oh,
yes.
You know, I always say that, money is a currency in this world, but love and kindness are my highest currencies. I value those above all else.
Amen. Oh, that's good. Exactly. I mean, there's lots of things, again, the paradigm I operate out of is that Christian one, and there's lots of things that, that preachers preach on and talk about and people meet over and all those sorts of things. But there are several words that seem to be curiously absent from that conversation and from that vocabulary. And that, those two words particularly are kindness and dignity. I think they're two very powerful words that are largely overlooked by those within, you know, the communities that I spend a lot of time in. You know, it's actually interesting because the word kindness in the book of Romans in the New Testament, Paul says, don't you know it's God's kindness that intends to lead you from your sins? In other words, God's not up there with a big stick. He's being kind to you. And some Christian places are a lot of things, but are they kind? Not so sure. They are. They're, you know, I have these conversations with my own colleagues. Because I think they're very, very important things for us to understand if we're going to be the kinds of leaders that bring positive social impact and change.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Deborah.
Do you have a notion that some of your clients resist for a while bringing God into their business plan? Or by the time
That's
they
a great
come
question.
To you, have they just...
It's a great question. I think for the most part, they've... And this, again, I can only point back to church leadership, is that... And it still exists. We've now been active, I think, in 20 nations in the last 4 years, working with business leaders from CEOs of multi-billion-dollar companies right down to small startups. And the bottom line is that there's a conversation that's out there that is consistent across, with no respecter of nation or gender or anything, that effectively says that, well, you know, my business is my business, and then I go to church. That my church is not considered ministry or anything particularly spiritual, and it's curious because these people, most of them don't know each other, and yet they're parroting the same thing, which tells me that the spiritual leaders in their world are really trying to keep them at arm's length and not empowering them to run and see their business as a vehicle for releasing the love of God upon the earth. So when they come across me, I rarely advertise. It's normally, you know, word of mouth where I'll get an email in the morning and someone, you know, I'll type the name in and you get the second letter of the last name and they pop up on Google, you know that there's someone of impact and then, you know, make the contact and have the conversation and say, well, okay, the first things first is that in actual fact you are going to become one of the most influential spiritual leaders in the world because you already have demonstrated favor over towns, cities, and nations. And as a pastor, minister, professional communicator, spiritual leader, whatever brand you want to stick on me, I'm not that guy. I am the guy to help you become that person. And so now let me show you how your vehicle of love is actually your business, and therefore you're a pastor over your business. You're entrusted. One of the great revelations that I felt we got that has just impacted so many lives and so many business leaders, simply put, is this, is that there are many powerful decisions as a business leader that you get to make on any given day. I posit that the most powerful decision you get to make is this. Are you going to use people to build your dream or use your dream to build people? That's a powerful decision that you get to make. I posit it's the most powerful one you get to make. And if you're
can you
going
say
to
that
be,
again?
Yeah.
Mark, can you just
you
say that again?
Are you going to use people to build your dream or your dream to build people? If you're going to be a person of spiritual influence in this world, a leader of any magnitude in any scope, shape, or form, you have to be a person who uses your business to build people. There's no other way around that. And so that usually opens up a very interesting conversation that sets us off on a journey together.
Wow, that is so exactly what we're talking about too, because we can either lead people by fear, or we can lead them in an inspired way. And what brings out the best in all of us if we don't inspire them to their own greatness?
Wow, absolutely.
And I would like to invite people who are either looking to do their mission statement for the first time or to revise one and adopt a new one or whatever, to start with, my business is rooted in love, kindness, and dignity, and start there and imagine where you can go from there.
Absolutely. You can't go too wrong from there, Deborah. I think that's a great starting place.
Yes. Absolutely.
Wow.
I know.
Well, you know, now that we're talking about inspired leadership versus fear-based leadership, and Mark, you and I have seen it in the world, you know, where people are coming from a different place, a leadership style, whether it's in business or in families or, you know, in circles. Right now, with what's happening in the world that is touching, you know, the entire world, the COVID crisis, I wanted you to kind of talk to, I know there's a lot of people that are very afraid, and it's very easy to go into that mindset because there's a lot of uncertainty around us. I wanted you to kind of maybe talk a little bit, maybe help people, you know, because I too believe that, you know, we were put here for whatever reason we were put here in this time, and I believe that everything is going to be okay. But I wanted you to maybe talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, as much as anything on these things, I become a bit of a social commentator, I suppose. But I think first of all, on the first layer is that it's not shaming people because of their responses or lack of response, because people are reacting and responding in really different ways. Do I wear a mask? Do I don't wear a mask? You know, first one. And I walked into some stores not wearing a mask, and the look I get from those who are wearing a mask is like, okay, now we have the masks and the unmasked, and we've now got another social divide. you know, and so I think firstly is recognizing that people need to just own their own response. That's one thing. And you know, fear is a lousy motivator, but shame and guilt are equally lousy motivators. And I put those three as a trio. Shame, guilt, and fear, they're the most powerful and the lousiest motivators that we can use to motivate anybody. So I think first and foremost, our responses to people around us is really important. Own your own response and be responsible for that response. And don't try and inflict your response on somebody else. I think that's first of all. I think one of the things too in that, because there is a lot of social upheaval and fear and everything going around, but rather than react and respond to somebody who may be, you know, acting and responding differently or negatively towards us, is asking asking that question. That's, I think, one of the most powerful questions we've got is, can you help me understand your position? Help me understand what's going on for you. That must be really hard for you right now. So actually showing some empathy towards other people. I think as leaders, we should be the first people, we sort of put it this way, should be the first people off the canvas when everybody gets a right hook and they're on the mat down for the count, the 10 count in the boxing ring, and that's, you know, it's your team or your business or your family or your world, and they're all on the mat because they've just hit a right hook. I want to be the first guy off the canvas. Two things happen. When you're the first person off the canvas, you get an unobstructed view of the horizon, so you can see with a clarity you haven't been able to see before. And the second thing is that you have a new compassion for people because you know how hard it is on the canvas and you're looking at them still there, and there's a new compassion that emerges for people. So I really have it in myself that I put things in place where I'm the first person off the canvas when we get hit down. So I think compassion and understanding and empathy for people is really, really important. I think one thing that we can lead by and coach and encourage people is that we don't go making, you know, decisions based out of fear, because 9 out of 10 times you're going to regret them. You might happen to luck at 1 out of 10, but the bottom line is 9 out of 10 times decisions that are made in fear, you're going to regret it somewhere along the line. So I think that, you know, any way that we can stay connected and help people open up healthy dialogue so they can process what they're thinking and feeling. I just think that's one of the greatest gifts we can give anybody. But one of the practical ways my wife and I are doing that is our lunchtime. Sometimes we've been setting up with some elderly folk in our, you know, spheres of influence that know how to use some technology, Zoom or FaceTime or whatever. We'll say, let's have a lunch date. And we'll plan it a couple of days ahead and they'll get their lunch ready and we'll get ours, because I've got to stop for lunch anyway. And so we'll set up the call, and then they sit at their dinner table eating lunch, and we're in our place eating lunch, and we'll sit there and just, you know, have a yarn for a while, just for an hour or so, and hear what they're thinking and what they're feeling, and some things that we might be able to learn from them and they can learn from us. And at the end of a call, you can just feel the tide of people's spirits rise. That there's a sense of hope about where we are right now, that we aren't isolated, that we aren't alone, that we are together and we're going to be okay. We allay the fears because we're able to open up conversation and show some empathy. So for me, I think there's some of the takeaways as I look at what type of impact can I bring to bring out a positive, you know, social encounter right now. Anything that helps to bring about social cohesion, even in a digital way, I think is really, really important, because when we're marginalized, you get that whole divide and conquer kind of mentality, and it increases people's fear responses.
Yeah, like especially at a time like this, to not forget our humanity.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I think that's such a good, I love that. That was very calming to me.
Well,
but
here's what I'm glad
my humanity.
I was going to say, Dawn, what I'm glad of is that we will get to listen to this again. The recording will be up as soon as we end this podcast, and I'm going to have to listen to it again, because I am learning second by second as you're talking, Mark. I'm like, wait, stop. I have to process what you're saying. I have to process it.
I'm taking notes.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I appreciate it really a lot. And I was thinking, well, you know, you're talking about the technology, and I'm thinking about Zoom and whatnot, and I'm thinking, well, you know, we have an opportunity to spirit Zoom with God at all times, and thereby be an open portal for other people, and have that love connection, you know, that we work on every day. So I like to think of that.
That's good.
And
But
I would like for you to talk about your app, because I know that is another opportunity for people to not only have more of you and your teachings, but also the church. So please tell us about your app.
Sure, thank you. Yeah, app is called You Church. So two words, You Church, because we believe people are the church. The church is not a building. In actual fact, years ago in Australia, we sold a church property, and oddly enough, I managed to get written in the contract of sale, because the building wasn't going to be demolished for quite some time, that they would allow us to put a big sign across the front of the church, because the church sat right in the middle of town. And the sign simply read, it was there for a year, it said, "The church has left the building." Because I wanted the community to realize, in actual fact, the building was never the church. It's always the people. That's what the church is. So when we developed the app, it was really important to us to send that message. So the app is called You Church, because you are the church. And so on there, what we've got is a digital platform where it's like having church in your pocket. And so we have several different things that are on there, but not least of which is that it facilitates micro communities. So we're finding that people are starting to gather together to watch the worship and the teaching, and then gather together to eat together and pray together and encourage each other in love. The basic four pillars of what we build with the You Church is actually the acronym LOVE. That's why I said before it resonates with me, because we link. It's LEAD in love. So don't mind me, leading in love. LEAD. L is linking the love of God one to another through meeting, greeting, and eating. So intentional connection. So we gather, you know, groups of people together all across the world. Gather whether they're in an office building or at home or wherever they may be, a coffee shop. They link the love of God together. The E is then they encounter the love of God together as well, and that's where the worship is there, for them to encounter the love of God. And then we actually train up our leaders how to lead communion. So those that want to do things like communion, then they can do that right where they are. The A then is activating the love of God within. That happens through the teaching side of things and through prayer, where we pray for each other's needs. And all of our teaching, we leave with a question for discussion. So there's interaction going on in each group. And then the D is the deliver the love of God to others, so they in turn may link, encounter, and activate the love of God together and within. So the app really facilitates that. We've now got groups popping up all over the place, particularly in Australia. It's taking off. We hope to open up Anathan Switzerland later this year. We've been recording worship and have connections into Norway and into the Netherlands, then also into Nepal, here stateside as well. And it's only been going 2 years. We started with just a couple of small little micro communities here in Charlotte, but it really is starting to get some traction now. And so we're at a point right now. We're redeveloping the app because it's clearly a real tool that people are enjoying using. A great story that came out was one lady in Australia said that she decided she would start a group of people that she didn't know yet. So what she did is she went into a coffee shop with some card making equipment for making, you know, just greeting cards, and had a little table full of all the bits, and sat down at the coffee shop, and there were several people there that, you know, were there by themselves, and so she invited them to come on over. So they came on over and started making cards with her, and she put the app down, and the music was playing on the app, and a little bit of the teaching, which is, you know, done in a way that people can understand it. And at the end of the time, she said, "Would you like to do this again?" I said, "Yeah, can we do it again next week?" So several weeks she did this for, and then finally the owner of the coffee shop came over and said, "I don't know where that music's coming from, but," she goes, "every time you've played that music in this business over these past weeks, we've tracked it, and our business has tripled when it plays. Can we play that music over our loud system here at the cafe?" So, I mean, it's just fun hearing the crazy and weird things that are just happening out there as we go fully digital. We're having much greater impact than if we were just stuck on a plot of dirt in a geographical location. The church has left the building. So for us, the app is all about being a vehicle for transferring the love of God, for releasing people to run with that message, you know, into their communities.
Oh, that is so powerful, Mark.
It is. I love it. And I have
and
to
where
say, my mother
find that.
Yeah, good.
Sorry, I didn't catch that.
Oh, I just asked, where can people find that app?
Oh yeah, so it's on the App Store, both for Android and for Apple, and it's simply called U Church, YOU, then second word Church, and you'll notice it by the lion, our Anathan lion. You'll see that there, and it's ready and free to download. One of the fun things, again, this whole God speaks to you kind of thing, I was sitting on my couch one day a couple of years back, and as clear as I've ever heard God speak, he said, "So, Mark, I want you to unlock the sound of heaven out of the nations." And I thought, that can't be God. Good night. What on earth is that? So I sat a little still for a little bit longer, and it came again and again. And I went into my wife and I said, "I think I just heard the weirdest thing I've ever heard." She goes, "What?" I said, "This is what I heard. I thought the Lord say, Mark, I want to invite you to unlock the sound of heaven out of the nation." So we unpacked what that could mean, and now we've recorded with a team of people here stateside, some of the most amazing sounding stuff, and then also we took a team to the Netherlands, we took a team out onto an island in Norway in the North Sea, and recorded up there, half of it in Norwegian, half in English in the Netherlands, just south of Rotterdam, half in Dutch and half in English, and it was one of the most phenomenal experiences. In fact, out in Norway, we recorded in the home of the Secretary General of Norway. When he heard that that's what we wanted to do, he said, "Could we please do it in his house?" And so we brought a team in there and connected up with some Norwegian musicians and singers, and we recorded 2 days in there as well. So, later this year we hope to back out in Europe again, and we've got, I think, seven other nations now that have signed up to say, when can we come out and do it there? So these are the fun things that are happening that we get to put on the app and just see things in different languages as this sound of heaven is released upon the earth.
Mm. Oh, well, as soon as we're done with our call, I'm downloading that app for sure.
Very good. And I hope to, it'll be probably about 6 weeks, because the way Apple works, it's about a 4-week process once you submit it. But our new upgraded version, which will be really, really majorly upgraded, will probably come live about in 6 weeks' time. And what it will do is it should automatically migrate everything onto the current app that you have. So it should just be a straight up sudden change, and you'll suddenly wake up one morning and go, wow, this thing has really changed. This is cool.
Oh, that's very exciting.
This is very exciting. Well, this has been an amazing opportunity to speak with you, and I'll tell you, I have taken 4 pages of notes, both sides, and I've got my acronyms loaded right. I've got my I am ready. I am studying. Can't wait for the app. So in alignment that you know your acronym for LEAD. Gosh, that's just so perfect, as we've been saying. So if you have anything else that you would like to impart before we close this up, this would be the time to do it. You can give your contact information and any other closing thoughts, and then, Dawn, you do the same.
Yeah,
okay.
Sure. No, I think email-wise is easy. It's my name, mark.appleyard@anathan.co, mark.appleyard@anathan.co, and always willing to set up a call and a conversation, because I know I grow more than I give away, just as I have today, just hearing the hearts of you guys as well. It's just been amazing. And I think that's just the thing. You know, this whole gig is not hard. This thing called life is not difficult. But it's asking some questions about other people and actually finding out how I can love others well. I just want to be a lover of God and a lover of people. And if I can be known for that, then I think I can sign off on this life, come the final day that I exist on this planet, because that's I don't think we can go far wrong. So I think it's each day just saying, I'll probably put it this way, as we've got a couple of minutes. We call it the power of a partnered yes. What are you going to say yes to? No one can steal your yes. You've got the power to choose what you're going to say yes to. So every morning I actually have a process that I go through, where I firmly hitch my yes to the things I want to say yes to before I have a conversation with another living soul. Now, again, in my paradigm, it's a Christian paradigm. So mine starts like this. I normally go, Jesus, before my feet even hit the floor today, before you've even asked me a question, my answer is yes. Now direct my feet where you want them to go. And then what do I say yes to? I say yes to encountering your perfect love. I say yes to releasing that over my wife and over my kids and over my family and over anyone who comes my way. I say yes to all your promises. I say yes to any prophetic words that might have come out of heaven towards me. I say yes to the provision to make those things happen. I say yes for people of peace to rise up and run with us in this goal of loving people well. I say yes to a long and healthy and a fun and fulfilled life. I say yes to greater impact and influence so I can release your love to greater places still. Jesus, I say yes to you again today. You know, that for me, it's not that difficult. It's as simple as what are you saying yes to? Because if you know what you're saying yes to, you don't even have to worry about what you're saying no to. We often focus on that negative side, but what about that positive side? What are we saying yes to? And that has led us to the four corners of this world.
Oh, wow, Mark. We could have you on for about 7 more hours. You are an amazing, inspiring, just wonderful person, and I'm so grateful to know you. Thank you so much for taking your time today and sharing your voice and your thoughts with us.
It's been a pleasure, guys. Thank you, and keep running strong. You guys are amazing. And you are flipping the world on its head, and I'm super proud and honored to be known as your friend and running mate. So well done, and keep running strong.
Thank you.
Hand in hand.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I would like to say this has been wonderful, and you have definitely equipped us to think and speak and live on earth as it is in heaven. And we can certainly look to more when your app is ready and whatever other kinds of time we have with you in the future. I look forward to that. And thank you so much for being with us. And Dawn, I love you as always. And this has been spectacular. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you both.
A pleasure, guys.
Goodbye, everyone.
Blessings on you guys.
Bye. Bye now.
Bye.